It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Welcome back to the third hour of Primetime Sports for March 5th. We're already March 5th already.
Wow.
Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt on my right. Why, thank God?
Well, because it's been a long winter. And I, even though it's still winter out there, March 5th sounds better than February 5th.
It does. It really has been a god-awful winter. It's just been horrid. I've had enough of it.
We should go back to Florida.
Well, why don't we? Let's go right now. All right, see you guys later.
I got a new fishing spot down there. Buck Martinez showed me the secret fishing spot.
I gotta get into fishing at some point.
I'll take you out if you want to go. You have to crawl through mangroves to get to it.
They don't come like pre-cleaned and everything, do they?
I put them back gently. I don't keep them anyway.
Oh, you don't keep them?
No, I let them go.
Oh, you're a catch and release guy.
I am. I torture them and then I let them go. But if you do want to come out, I will show you when we get back down there. I bet Buck's a big fisherman.
Yeah, and he's got a spot. Well, everybody's got a spot in Florida, don't they?
Spot like you go through a tennis court and you kind of go between apartment buildings and then you crawl through mangroves on this little path and then you wade out.
There's snakes and stuff?
Probably. Hmm.
Why don't you just fish, catch, and bring me the food?
I'll bring you the fish.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of snakes. I'm a big fan of Don Banks, though. No segue there. Don Banks of Sports Illustrated joins Primetime Sports. How you doing, Mr. Banks?
That was the worst segue I've ever heard.
That was god awful. There's only one way it could go, though. It could only have been worse. It could not have been better. So, thank heavens for small mercies. So, question: who's happier, you to be on this show or LeSean McCoy to be going to Buffalo?
Yeah, me on this show.
Yeah, I thought so.
I think McCoy. First of all, I think he's a sensitive guy. I think he gets his feelings hurt pretty routinely, and I don't think he's going to go very easily to Buffalo. I'm not saying he can do a lot about it, and I think Rex Ryan will turn on the charm offensive and tell him how big a part of the turnaround he'll be there. But I don't think he's going to be happy about it, and I think even if he saw something on the writing on the wall, I think he's a guy who's never played outside of the state of Pennsylvania, high school, college, pros. I think he looks at Buffalo right now with nowhere near the certainty of what he had in Philadelphia.
What are the alternatives for he and for his agent, Drew Rosenhaus?
Well, I mean, I guess they could make a big enough stink that the Bills just decide he's not worth the trouble, because the trade obviously isn't final until next Tuesday. And it really is just, I guess, if he wanted to come out and say, I don't want to be there, I'm not going to be happy to be there, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, if he thinks he's going to get that kind of money just anywhere on the free market, he's wrong. So his best deal is to accept the trade and report to Buffalo and be paid it's north of $10 million this coming year.
What did you, that part of the LeSean McCoy's feelings aside, what were your thoughts when you heard this about this deal, Don?
Well, I didn't think they got enough for him, to be honest. I mean, he is one of the premier backs. I understand he didn't have his best year last year, but he's 1 year removed from his best year. It said to me, Chip Kelly he really is going to build a team of guys that he thinks are part of the solution, not the problem. He wants the kind of guys that he thinks can run that offense the best. He wants guys that are not a problem in any way. And I think he thought he had to finesse a McCoy at times, and he had to think about him too often in terms of play calling and just making sure he felt needed and wanted. It was another, for me, it was another signal that Chip Kelly is absolutely going to do things his way all the way in Philadelphia.
You know, it's interesting. Your article in Sports Illustrated, you talked about this move, and I find it fascinating because your line about the star system may be alive and well in the NFL, but just not in Philadelphia. We're essentially talking about a guy in Chip Kelly who's trying to put together a roster of interchangeable parts, aren't we?
In a lot of ways, he is.
Which is fascinating, given the way the game is now.
And think about it. His background as a college coach is he's used to cycling through a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to be able to build around a guy long term. And I just think he's comfortable with that. And he's not looking to create, well, I need four or five key players and then build around them. I think the quarterback is the big question, and I think it's very likely that he wants to take a shot at getting Mariota. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but I think it really he trusts his track record for finding running backs, as he did at Oregon. And in this year's running back rich draft, I think he looked at it and said, why am I going to use up as much of the cap on McCoy when I could get somebody younger, cheaper, and maybe use a guy 2 or 3 years and get another one.
Yeah.
And I think that's his mentality all the way. He is trying to build his program, his system, his culture, and the players are just kind of the interchangeable parts.
Is Kiko Alonso, is there, how relevant is Kiko Alonso to this? There seems to be there's a diversity of opinion about how good he is. He made a lot of plays as a rookie, but there are people who think that he's not as good as that might suggest.
Well, it is a small, sample size, and that did surprise me because we're talking about a guy who had one, very productive year, but it was one, and then he's coming off a pretty significant injury. Not that an ACL isn't surmountable these days. Clearly, that's the other thing with Chip. He wants to gravitate towards the known quantity, and he's amassing a pretty good Oregon Ducks roster.
Yeah.
And, that didn't work for Steve Spurrier in Washington when he went after all the ex-Gators.
Right.
Because he went 7-9 and 6-10. Chip did go 10-6 2 years in a row, and even though they missed the playoffs, 10 wins is a standard of a success in the NFL. So I think he trusts that he wants to get guys who know his system, know his program, know what he's about. And, he's not interested, really, in what we think of that or what the rest of the NFL thinks of that.
In conversation with Don Banks of SI, the Bills also making news insofar as their quarterback situation is concerned. Matt Cassel, a member of the Bills. What do you make of that?
I like Matt Cassel. He's a solid, 1B type of quarterback. I'm not sure it's an upgrade over Kyle Orton.
Mm-hmm.
I still look at it and say E.J. Manuel and Matt Cassel. That, to me, is not better than Kyle Orton and E.J. Manuel. So that's the big part of the equation, and it has been for 15-plus years in Buffalo what they're going to do at that position. If, I get it. They're going to run the ball and play defense, and they want a quarterback who they think can keep them in games. But that was the mentality Doug Marrone struck after benching E.J. Manuel last year, or really even before that, but they just didn't even get, they didn't even get game manager out of E.J. Manuel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Orton move was a good move, but what they've done is just try to replace him with the closest facsimile of his level as they could.
So Rex goes, it always comes back to the fact that with Mark Sanchez, who may at his best may or may not have been better than either of those guys you mentioned. Rex got him to the AFC Championship game, right? He has done this with defense and running the ball.
Yes, but not lately. The critics says, yes, that blueprint did work his first 2 years, but what about the last 4 years? Because defense and running the ball was supposed to be the blueprint most of those years as well, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
What do you think happens with Dominguez Sue?
Well, I mean, I think he's going to be the prettiest girl at the dance, so to speak, when it starts. I think teams with a ton of money and need for star appeal, you can put Jacksonville, Oakland, and Miami somewhere in some order at the top of that list, are going to come after him. It's not an inconsequential thing that Florida has no state tax. California has a very high one.
Mm-hmm.
I just think somebody is going to throw a monopoly money number at him, and he's probably going to sign fairly quickly, and that's going to be the biggest headline early on in free agency where he lands.
And let's make no mistake about it. I mean, he's worth it, isn't he?
I think so in terms of how he can dictate and dominate a game when he's at his best. You know, would I take him or J.J. Watt? I'd take Watt. He's certainly proven to be the more consistent, you know, game-breaking, game-making type of threat. But, you know, in today's game, to have that kind of player in the interior defensive line and somebody that the other team has to be aware of and game plan for and try to stay away from, I guess I'd say he's worth it.
Where does that,
see what the number is, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Where does that now? So where does that leave the Lions in the post-Sue era in terms of their defense?
Well, you know, they got the Nick Fairley situation as well. They declined their option on him.
So that's the middle of their defensive line is gone, basically.
Right. I mean, it's possible that, you know, who knows? I mean, Vince Wilfork gets released today. Could he be a stopgap answer for someone for a year or two at the most? It's possible. I mean, I think his market could be for teams that missed out on Sue or, you know, a team that lost Sue. And he's, you know, don't discount he could still end up back in New England at a lower number, because I think that would still work on a lot of levels for him and the Patriots. But I think Detroit, you know, they backed themselves into a bad corner with the inability to get a long-term deal all this time. They kept talking optimistically about maybe even franchising him. I didn't think that was ever realistic. And, you know, they're not done yet, but I have to believe that it is 80% looking very bleak that Sue is ever in Honolulu Blue again.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that, which, again, kind of means there's going to be a rethink in Detroit. You know, you've got a team that is you know, has been good and has been chasing the Packers, but, you know, really its personality, you know, has been defined by that defensive line in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and they, you know, Mosley's, I think he's up as well. They really could have a whole new look on that defensive line, and it has kind of been the tone setter for the entire organization.
Don,
for good and bad.
Yeah, for good and bad, exactly.
The Broncos have announced that you know, Peyton Manning's passed his physical, and I mean that rework contract is in effect. Are you surprised by how this played out, or were you one of those people who thought there was absolutely no doubt that Peyton Manning was going to come back for at least another year?
Initially, I thought there was doubt.
Really?
I mean,
okay.
Coming out of that playoff loss and how he looked, and he just looked physically kind of spent, and the arm didn't look real strong. But I think the longer this went on, quickly it became apparent that he didn't want to go out that way. He wanted to try one more shot. And I think, you know, what he did with the pay cut was acknowledge that their shot at a Super Bowl, which is what the whole story is about in Denver right now, is better if they can keep another free agent by his reduction. And maybe it's Julius Thomas at tight end, or maybe it's you know, pot roast Terrence Knighton at defensive mm-hmm. tackle. But I think it's, you know, it's wise of him. He obviously, it's a pride factor, but, you know, they gave him a pretty smart incentive. You know, if we get where we're trying to go, you'll get that money back. $2 million for the Super Bowl, $4 million to win the Super Bowl. In some ways, that's what the whole story is about right now. And I really thought it was possibly might walk away, but the longer the question lingered and more Denver made it clear that they wanted him back, it seemed like it was headed for one last shot.
But do you think, Don, that they're, you know, again, it's hard to look into the hearts and heads of John Elway and company, but like, are they fully and completely convinced at this stage that Peyton Manning, you know, that he was just worn down at the end of the season and that he still has the potential to be back to where he was at the beginning of the season? You'd have to be... There must be something lingering there saying, you know, but maybe he's just kind of done. You know,
I think a big part of the hiring of Kubiak was an acknowledgement that they wanted to run the ball. They wanted to have more of a balanced offense. Fox went to that in the second half of the season. I think it's an acknowledgement in some ways that we can't put this all on Manning's shoulders at this stage of his career and with him, you know, playing as a 39-year-old next year. It's the Elway late career model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Shanahan riding Terrell Davis, and Elway, not that he came along for the ride, but he certainly wasn't leading that offense in the way that he had all those years. I think Elway is taking a page right out of his own history.
So I know it's kind of hard to imagine Peyton Manning as a game manager at this stage in his career, but, you know,
That's basically what he's you're asking him to do.
But Elway won two Super Bowls, you know, at that stage of his career where, you know, he was, you know, he was mostly handing the ball off. It wasn't the pyrotechnics from the early part of his career at all.
No, I don't know that we'll ever get to the game manager.
I know, it's a small overstatement.
Your point is well taken. I mean, by relative standards, it may look closer to that for Manning next year than it ever has before. And if he wins a ring, it'll be written that it was all worth it, and that's all that will matter. And if he doesn't, it will be Denver tried everything and came up empty, got close, but didn't get there in his four-year stay.
What drives Peyton Manning, Don?
I think he thinks more about his legacy and he thinks more about his history in this game than the average player. I think he desperately wants to join that two-ring club, and he knows a lot of people have said he's greatest regular season quarterback of all time, but the playoffs are the glaring weak link in the resume. And I think he generally wants to write one last chapter that, you know, makes us sit back, put a bow on it, and say one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest, and look how it ended. And I think he really envies the Elway late mm-hmm. career turn. He's got a ring. I think he desperately wants to have another chapter late in his career after the neck surgery that really kind of just caps everything.
If you were asked to predict, would you think he will have a happy Elway end to his career or a sadder Joe Montana end to his career?
Yeah, no, I'm going for the latter.
Me too.
I don't think he will have a John Elway type ending. I don't think it'll be a ride off into the triumphant sunset. I think it will probably be what an unbelievable career and what a legacy of missed opportunities in the postseason.
Yeah, like I never, you know, people say somebody should retire. I always think, you know, if I was those guys, I'd never retire. You know, I'd want to be dragged away because everything else is probably worse. But, you know, there is that sense of, you know, we all have memories of guys seeing guys playing late, seeing Joe Namath play late or seeing Montana play late, where it's not that it wrecks it, but, you know, it's it becomes hard to shake after a while.
Yeah. And the Namath Rams era in the Uniteds with the Chargers. I mean,
yes.
This is not that. You know, this guy, let's not.
He's got more left than that, yeah.
Played at a heck of a high level. His bad year this year, or his down year this year, if that's what it was better than, you know, 90% of the quarterbacks in the league. But his standard is so high that any slippage seems to be that much more noticeable.
Mr. Banks, as always, it's great to talk to you.
Okay, guys. Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks, Don.
It's Don Banks of SI.com. I find Peyton Manning. We've talked about this, I think, Stephen. I just find Peyton Manning kind of an intriguing guy.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot there. I just can't decide whether I'm getting more and more frustrated with him or whether I'm kind of pulling for him more and more. It's hard to kind of make up my mind on.
Well, you know, we did some stuff a couple of years ago down in New Orleans with the family, you know, around the last Super Bowl mm-hmm. in New Orleans. And it was interesting to kind of get a look into the Manning family and kind of how they grew up and where they grew up. And, you know, obviously a football-saturated environment with Archie. But also, you know, there's more to those guys, mm-hmm. that, right? And that's part of what I think, you know, I like about him. I think, yeah, you know, obviously he's driven to be a great quarterback and is the son of a great quarterback who played for a lot of crappy teams. But there is something else to those guys. Now there's another dimension to them. And since then, I think I've seen him in a slightly different light. Mm-hmm. I root for him in a way that I didn't before.
Yeah.
You know, I just do. I root for, you know, him and Eli in his own, you know, in his own way with, you know, with his kind of, you know, he's going to be an interesting legacy guy when he packs it in.
Sure,
when you say,
is.
Boy, he won, you know, won Super Bowls and had some not great years. And so what do we make of him? But yeah, they're a fascinating group, the Mannings.
And the thing that has always kind of impressed me about them is, and I remember the piece you guys did, Archie in himself is kind of, he's sort of the opposite of the stage mother or the stage father, isn't he?
Yep. And,
which you may not expect. And I think that might, you know what? I think that might explain a little bit of how Eli and Peyton turned out, is they kind of had a dad who just let them kind of, it's not that he let them go. He let them do what they wanted to do in the confines of what they had to do to be quarterback.
Well, they're super competitive internally, right?
Yes.
So Eli, Peyton, and Cooper, the brother who was the wide receiver who, you know, ended up, his career ended, was shortened by an injury, you know, or a condition that they discovered when he was playing college football. But the three of them were like hyper competitive. But he sent them to a school. You know, there's football schools, football mm-hmm. high schools, you know, and around New Orleans there's some big ones, right?
Some factories, yeah.
And he sent them to this kind of smaller school. It's a nice school, private school, but not a football school in that sense, right? You know, they lived in the Garden District. They lived in the community. They mm-hmm. weren't kind of hothoused. They were allowed to kind of evolve. You know, they were evolved as the sons of an NFL quarterback. But you're right, it's not. They're not the Marinoviches, you know. It's not like they put the kid in a box and said we're going to turn you into a quarterback no matter what. They've all kind of came through it in their own way, which is, you know, and it's amazing in that sense that two of them still turned out to be NFL quarterbacks. And you know, Cooper could have played in the NFL as well if his health had held up.
Yeah, and the other thing I find interesting too is that go back and do some reading on what Peyton was like at Tennessee and what Eli was like, and I mean, they're not monks. they've had a pretty good time growing up and being the big man on campus. But boy, they've conducted themselves pretty well.
Yeah,
as professionals.
Yeah, you know, you get a lot of people take shots at you if you're in that position, and you're going to get lots of, you know, people are going to take runs at you for sure. But yeah, honestly, if you look at one guy, you know, who has been at times the greatest quarterback in football, and the other guy who won two Super Bowls and playing in the biggest market in the world. And, you know, it's, you know, really, yeah, there's not a lot to argue with that. No, there aren't.
What do you make? We didn't really get a chance to talk to you, but the LeSean McCoy addition by the Buffalo Bills.
I love LeSean McCoy. So yeah. I love LeSean McCoy as a football player. He's, you know, I'd say last year was a slightly down year, but he's as exciting a player as there is in the NFL.
And the thing is, Buffalo's kind of a weird city because there are players who come to Buffalo hating it.
Yes.
Who end up liking it.
And then there's some who come there hating it and continue to hate it. Like Marshawn Lynch.
Like Marshawn Lynch, exactly.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of those guys, you know, the kind of classic Bills teams, the Jim Kellys and those guys who stayed, right, who stuck around and live in the community still. You know, it's an odd, they're an odd mix, Buffalo, right now, because they've got a tremendous defensive team. You know, even without Kiko Alonso coming back, they're going to be a very, very good defensive team.
Preston Brown really emerged last year.
Yeah, and they're right on the edge of being a playoff team, and they were right on the edge of being a playoff team with Kyle Orton playing quarterback. You know, you've got Fred Jackson, who's a steady guy in the back. You're going to lose C.J. Spiller, but you're bringing in this guy. You've got Sammy Watkins, who's a fantastically exciting player. But it's just, how can you win with... You know, you're going to pass the Patriots with Matt Castle playing quarterback, or we'll see what Rex does. If I was a Bills fan, I would be, you know, look, they've had a tough go anyway, but I would be extraordinarily frustrated right now looking at this team and saying, you know, if we had a B-plus quarterback, we're a playoff team.
Do you write off E.J. Manuel? Are you ready to write him off?
I think you kind of have to. I think that was a disastrous pick.
Yeah, and some of the, I'm sure you read some of the comments from some of the players who left Buffalo about how he had no command in the huddle, no command at all. I think it might have even been, was it C.J. Spiller, where somebody was talking about how he just, the difference between Kyle Orton and him was when Kyle Orton was in the huddle, you knew he was running the show, and E.J., you never got that feeling. You just didn't seem comfortable taking command of the situation.
Well, you know, you look at it, there have been a lot of, you know, kind of highly touted. Now, it was a curious pick when they made it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people kind of said, really? You know, is that the guy?
It's a bit of a reach, a lot of people thought.
That's exactly. But there have been, you know, you think of all the guys who've been drafted, you know, not the Lux and guys like that, the absolute blue chippers, but some guys who are just a notch below that who have not panned out. Like, there have been a ton of them in the NFL in the last two or three years. So he's not the only one. You know, even mm-hmm. you know, Rex's guy in with the Jets, Geno Smith, you know, like there's been a bunch of these guys who just did not quite pan out. And, you know, I think that's still, you know, what they lack, and in some ways what they've lacked going all the way back to Jim Kelly with a little tip of the cap to Doug Flutie when he was good, is that quarterback, is having a guy, having an elite level quarterback playing Buffalo.
Yeah, and I mean, you get what they're doing. You get what Greg Roman's doing with having LeSean McCoy and wanting to rely on the running game. But you're right. At some point, your quarterback has to win some games with you.
Well, let's look at look at the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. You know, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. You know, that's neither the you still got to have a guy playing that position at that level, I think, to win in this NFL.
What do you think? What do you think Ndamukong Suh goes?
That's a good question. It's, you know, it's, he's, I think, you know, when he talks about the Jacksonville's and the Oakland's in a place like that. You know, Oakland kind of seems like the right fit, right? Bad boy guy makes, and that's a team that's about to get good.
They're close
to being good, and he would be a significant add there, and it kind of goes with the whole thing. But I like the fact Don mentioned taxes, because it is, you know, you think that's, you know, that's, they look at the uniform, they look at the, they absolutely look at stuff hang on a second, Florida, no state tax, man, that means my bazillion dollars is going to be
a bazillion dollars. Yeah. Exactly. No, it's true when you know, people kind of make that leap, and as you said, they look at the uniform, but it is... Especially for guys, I mean, you've got that one big contract in your career, and people are going to look at it. Well, come on, taxes. A guy's still going to be able to get by. Yeah, but the point is, this is your big contract. You want to maximize, especially in football, because
the money's not guaranteed. A chunk of the money's not going to be guaranteed.
Exactly.
Right?
So you want to maximize the money you can get, and yeah, taxes make a huge difference. Absolutely.
So I would say those are the teams. You know, that made a lot of sense, and not back in Detroit. You know, it's hard. It's going to be an interesting rethink of that Detroit team, because again, they were close. You know, they were really close, and couldn't quite get past the Packers. But you know, you take him away, and you take Farrelly away, and it's a different. You know, that's the center of your defensive line, and you know, in the NFL, it all starts with you got to have defensive tackles who can stop the run. That's got to be where it starts. And you take away one, the best in the league, and Farrelly's pretty good. Yeah, that's a different football team.
Let's take our break. We'll come back with the stretch drive of primetime sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. It's a stretch drive for Thursday, March 5th. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. He'll be back in a couple of days. Well, he'll be back next Friday. Stephen Brent to my right. We got a pretty good week next week. James Hinchcliffe will join us in studio on Tuesday, mayor of Hinchtown.
Mm-hmm.
And always good to talk to him. This is going to be a lot of fun on Thursday. There's a new documentary out called Champs, Vander Holyfield.
Yeah.
That's a segment I'm just going to turn over to you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
You know what? I don't think I've ever interviewed a Vander Holyfield at all.
He's an interesting guy.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he's. I don't know if he's officially retired yet. I got to ask him that first. I'm not sure he ever officially retired.
Well, boxing's making a comeback. Maybe he'll come out. How old is he?
Oh God, someone's gonna have to. He's 50, I think. Anyway, but you know, I remember I was thinking about, because we're having him on, about that fight. It was the first Lewis fight, I think, where he was convinced that God had told him he was going to knock out Lennox Lewis in the third round. And it was, and he was straight up about it, right? Yeah. So I'm going to knock him out in the third round. God's told me I'm going to knock him out. Happiest guy. Big smile on his face. Goes to the press conference. God told me I'm going to knock him out in the third round. Comes out for the third round. Big smile on his face. God's told me I'm going to knock him out in the third round. Bell goes to the end of the third round. Lennox Lewis is still there. He's going, maybe. Maybe I was praying to the wrong guy. You know? That was the controversial draw, that fight. Lennox really won. But, Vander's, he's had an interesting... an interesting life outside the ring.
Yes, so Evander Holyfield on Thursday. Oh, we got to mention, by the way, because we're all about hockey, as you well know in Sportsnet, Alexander Ovechkin's a scratch from the Capitals game tonight with a lower body injury.
So that could be anything from a hangnail to a broken femur.
Yeah, or something in between.
I love that.
Lower body injury?
A lower upper body, yeah.
It is something else. Chris Novinsky is co-founder and executive director of the Sports Legacy Institute. He is, he's at the forefront of the battle. I guess battle's the right word. Battle to increase people's understanding of CTE, the issues of brain injuries in professional sports. And Chris Novinsky joins Primetime Sports. Hello, Chris.
Appropriate segue from boxing.
I was going to say, I was going to say an appropriate segue from boxing. Exactly. Hello, Chris.
Hello, good evening.
So we understand Steve Weatherford and Sidney Rice, two more NFLers, have agreed to donate their brains to the Sports Legacy Institute for Concussion Research. How common is this becoming now, Chris? Are we seeing more and more professional athletes follow the lead of others in this area?
Sure. Well, first I got to say they haven't necessarily donated to us yet. They've pledged to donate.
Pledged to donate. Okay.
We're planning to talk soon.
Okay.
But you know, 90% of people who've pledged have pledged here. Yeah, it's a you know, fascinating thing. You know, I first came up with the idea back in 2008 when we had just gotten a few brains of former athletes, like Andre Waters and Chris Benoit, and I was calling families to you know, try to get them to donate. At that time, people had never heard of athletes donating their brains, so it was a strange concept, and we had kind of a low percentage of families agree. So I thought, well, you know, a better way to do this would raise awareness of the program is to get athletes to pledge, follow them longitudinally, and then have more brains to study in the future. And it started with about 16 former pro athletes, including Ted Johnson and some other people who had Cindy Parlow-Cohn, high-profile problems with concussions. And now, you know, now we've sort of stopped keeping track because the number got over 1,000, and it was pretty complicated, you know, for the database for that, as it's an unfunded kind of tracking system. But basically, it's great that so many athletes are willing to support the cause.
I know it's a weird, this is going to sound weird as I suggest this, but there's a competition for those brains, though, isn't there, as well, among different research groups?
Well, it's one of those things that, you know, again, you know, people, and I had never heard of brain banking and that sort of work before I got into this. If you look at some of the more commonly known diseases, like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's, like, you know, dozens of universities and hospitals around the country have brain banks studying those. For this, we were the first brain bank studying CTE. But there's no reason why there shouldn't be dozens of them across the country, across the world, so that more people can study this. This is the only one where you have high-profile celebrities dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, you know, well, if you read about it in the newspaper, all you have to do is pick up a phone to ask. So unfortunately, some families have gotten a couple calls, but it's not like it's, you know, 90% of the time or even more, we don't know of other groups pursuing the same brain. And we try to be as, you know, as respectful as possible to these families.
In conversation with Chris Novinsky, Sports Legacy Institute co-founder and executive director. Chris, there have been a couple of reports lately about steps being taken now, or the discovery, or I don't know how you describe it, the discovery on the part of some neurosurgeons that they can diagnose in living patients CTE. Where do we stand with that? And clearly that would be a huge advancement, obviously, but where do we stand with that?
Yeah, we stand that that's simply not true. So most of the tests that are being used have been borrowed from Alzheimer's disease and learning how to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. But you've never heard an Alzheimer's researcher say, hey, I can diagnose Alzheimer's disease with 100% accuracy before you're deceased, even though we've been studying that for 100 years. So people who have been out there saying we can diagnose it now are simply searching for publicity and funding for their projects. But the reality is we're still a few years away, although it's much more promising now than it ever has been.
So I guess in terms of, in the reports that I'd read talked about things like baseline testing of CTE in active players. That's a little, shall we say, optimistic right now.
Yeah, that specific article you're referring to is incredibly optimistic and potentially inappropriate. You know, there's certain issues about, you know, privacy for players. There's other issues about whether or not you should know that you have a degenerative disease.
True.
When there's no treatment for it,
mm-hmm.
and when you're asymptomatic, because if you don't have symptoms yet, it can cause you dramatic stress and depression.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you have something coming in 20 years, and if you didn't know, you'd live your next 20 years much better. It's a little bit of a crazy idea that sounds good for an article but not good in real life.
So how's this stuff starting, you know, again, it sounds like we're getting into some ethical gray areas here as well. Why is this stuff starting to pop up in that form, Chris?
Why are people talking about these things?
Well, or why are people, you know, talking about things that, you know, in theory aren't true? In terms of the science.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an incredibly high profile area. I mean, that's part of the issue is that if you think about it, it's really hard to get health news like into the newspaper on mm-hmm. discussed on the radio.
Yep.
But if you attach it to sports, we're here talking about it right now. So I think a lot of people are trying to take advantage of that by making grand statements that'll get them interviews, that'll get them coverage. But it's sort of even more abuse than you might see in other fields of science.
In conversation with Chris Nowinski, Sports Legacy Institute co-founder and executive director, and I guess Chris, this was almost it's almost to be expected, wasn't it? Because the more people that get involved in this, and you pointed this out, I mean, the more hunger there is for funding. And how do you get funding? Well, you get funding by being optimistic, right? You get funding by being the guy that says, hey, you know what? I might have something here that's helping us turn the corner.
Right. Right, and the good, that's exactly right. And on the good side of this, if you look back to 10 years ago, there are probably 10 or 20 times as many smart scientists working on treatments for CTE, prevention of concussions, technology, et cetera. So on the one hand, it's been wonderful raising awareness of this. And all this awareness has done a lot to help parents make better choices for their kids, athletes make better choices for themselves. So there's a huge upside to all this awareness, but it can always be taken advantage of. And you know, when it comes down to medicine, you know, the ethics are incredibly important, and doing things the right way are incredibly important. And I spend some of my time calling people up and telling them to knock it off when they're crossing lines and really diminishing the great work that so many people have done.
You know, and it's interesting you mention that, because I'm going to kind of expand it a little bit. I remember a couple of years ago when John Farrell was managing the Toronto Blue Jays. He'd come from the Cleveland Indians, and the Indians had kind of made a habit or took steps towards developing their own kind of biomechanical analysis for pitching. And the idea was, let's do as much work as we can, come up with kind of an idea of what type of pitcher does what and how he has to do it in order, you know, that lends itself towards the guy getting hurt at some point. And eventually he got to the point where he said you had to sit down and ask yourself, and this gets to your point, I think, Chris, okay, you're getting information that suggests this 20-year-old kid probably could have a serious arm injury when he's 23 or 24. Do you really want to know that? You know, I mean, now you're getting into a guy's quality of life, and that is kind of the gray area you were talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, you're exactly right. To take that a step further, you know, I had a conversation with a professional sports league about gathering data on players and trying to make predictions, et cetera. And the union side very wisely said, well, we don't want to necessarily do that, because if we're wrong, and at this point we can't be sure we're right, we might cause some guy to not get a contract because we gave him the shadow of something.
Right.
But it's not exactly true.
Do you think this vigorous conversation that you have been a big part of, Chris, if I, and then a lot of the focus has been on the National Football League, is the National Football League significantly safer right now than it was when this conversation began? I'm thinking back to the just recently concluded playoffs and watching Russell Wilson, you know, appear to be concussed and yet come back into a game. I know there are concussion protocols that they're supposed to follow, but you know, has this talk and this awareness, and I'm putting quotation marks around the awareness, actually made it safer at this point?
You know, I think there are definite things you can point to that have made it safer. Like, there's so much more limited hitting in practice. You know, there's so many fewer kickoff returns. You don't have a wedge. Like, all those things make you safer. But on the other side, you know, clearly, you know, when it's a big game, guys aren't coming out, so there's still a lot of danger. And if you think about it, you know, the question is how much of those changes really taken off the risk? If, you know, what you might be talking about is we've just turn cigarettes into light cigarettes. And what they found out when they had quote-unquote light cigarettes is that people still got cancer at a rate that was just unacceptable. And so, you know, they thought light cigarettes would fix the cancer problem, and it didn't. So maybe even if guys are a little safer, the question is, are they safe enough? I don't know if you saw the cover of the New York Times this morning, but they had a story about a 40-year-old. This guy's, you know, played 3 years ahead of me in college, so we would have crossed over. He's 40 years old and homeless. And clear signs of mental illness, and a lot of people around him think it's due to the head trauma that he suffered. It's in fact a good chance that it's due to the head trauma. We can't prove it. So, you know, you have to realize how bad the human suffering can become when you do get something like CTE, and a lot of football players are getting it.
Chris, one of the things that has kind of intrigued me is, as someone who watches a lot of soccer, as someone whose kid has played soccer, we see a lot of incidences in European soccer leagues and the high-profile leagues, the Premiership, La Liga, where guys, where, you know, they clash heads. There's clearly, I mean, you don't have to be a doctor to see that there's a very good likelihood of a brain injury, and the guy's back in the field in 3 or 4 minutes. Are European sports and European sports bodies, are they catching up to us in North America? Are they ahead of us? Are they behind us? How would you judge that? Because it just seems to be remarkable. It's almost as if there's a lack, there's a gap between what we're doing and what's going on in Europe.
It's a great question, and I've spent a lot of time there. I actually spoke at Parliament in London last year when they started having hearings like we had with our congressional hearings in 2009. So the concussion conversation is finally getting to Europe, but it's being driven by World Rugby.
Oh, okay.
World Rugby, you know, 2 years ago, they fought back and said, we don't have CTE in rugby. It's not really a problem. Then we proved CTE in rugby out of BU, and there was some education done. And then they said, you know what, you're right, and we're going to attack this head on. And so they actually hand out their posters on concussions actually say concussions can kill. They go further in their messaging than we do in the States. Hmm. But soccer is getting a pass right now. It's amazing. Like, you're right. You see guys get knocked out and stay in games.
Oh, Hugo Lloris last year. Yeah, Hugo Lloris last year, Tottenham goalkeeper. He was out, and he was vomiting, and he came back in.
And the World Cup was the same way. I mean, it was embarrassing. So FIFA, has its reputations. They're certainly going to probably be the last people to take this seriously.
All right, Chris, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. Always good to talk to you, and keep at it.
All right, appreciate it. Nice to talk to you guys. Take care.
Take care. That's Chris Nowinski, Sports Legacy Institute co-founder and executive director. Must be, why do I always want to say Nov? I want to make the
like
W
Dirk,
of V.
Make him Dirk Nowitzki.
Could be. Anyway.
It's an interesting conversation, though, Jeff, because, and I keep thinking of Russell Wilson. I'm trying to remember which game that was. I think it was the Packers game in the playoffs, but, you know, got at his bell rung in the old parlance and, you know, came back in and won the football game in the end. But would more people be upset, you know, about the fact that Russell Wilson came back in and potentially played a playoff game concussed and then led his team to the Super Bowl, and, you know, or would they be more upset if he'd been yanked from that game and the backup quarterback from the Seahawks had lost that football game? You know, we are quite willing to tolerate other people taking risks.
And as Ryan Walsh
for our entertainment.
Julian Edelman in the
same thing, yeah.
In the Super Bowl.
Where
you
watch that and you say, "Boy, that sure looks like a concussion to me." And isn't he supposed to be in the quiet room having a chat with people? Okay. And if he's actually concussed, isn't he supposed to be not in this game anymore?
And Chris mentions the World Cup, and of course, I think it was Christian Kramer of Germany who had the concussion in the championship, and he stayed out there for.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of lip service here, right?
And again,
if people look into their hearts as sports fans, you know, understand that you're pretty, most of us who watch this stuff are willing to let these guys take those risks so the game will go on.
It's like, it's the old story. You enjoy the sausage, you just don't want to see it being made.
That's correct. And, you know, again, those were two pretty vivid, you know, especially the two with Edelman and with Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
As vivid an example as you could imagine on the biggest stage. And I don't recall, you know, again, people's kind of said, hey, that sure looked like a concussion, but I missed the outrage, if there was outrage about those guys playing on.
Yeah, no, it's I've got to tell you, we're part of it to blame. We're partly to blame as well, because it's amazing how many times in the telecast that happens. It's referred to and then it's just dropped. And like I said, it's enjoy the sausage. You don't like seeing it being made. Mr. Brunt, thanks for doing this. You'll be back tomorrow.
I will
the round table.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, it's going to be you, Shannon, and Sixero, I believe, on the round table tomorrow.
Must be free food.
I'm just kidding. Why? Because Sixero's here?
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, that free fried food, no doubt, Sixero's here. For Stephen Brunt, John Shannon, I'm Jeff Blair, saying thank you so much for joining us in Primetime Sports. Enjoy your night. Jays baseball is next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll talk to you tomorrow at the Friday Roundtable. Take care, everybody.